now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today we have a show of two halves, two games of the season, both packed with incidents, bonkers tactics and that dreaded VAR. And joining me, Tom Clark, to debate all of that, and who knows, maybe have a little falling out here and there. Making the case for the defence, we have a former left-back and centre-half who made more than 300 appearances for six clubs in the Football League, Gregor Robertson. Leading the strikers' union, we've got a former towering centre-forward who scored 248 goals for seven clubs across England, Scotland and France, Tony Cascarino. And knitting it all together with his usual sophistication and nuance, and maybe stirring things up a little bit too, we've got the chief correspondent for The Times and Sunday Times, Martin Samuel. Gents, what a week. Tone, I saw you muttering to Gregor there. Did I get your stats wrong? Was it more than that?
No, you just left my international goals out.
Oh, yeah,
but I still seven, Tom.
But I didn't want to make Gregor feel bad, you know. He's only got those under 21 caps, you
I know,
see.
But you're just making me feel bad, so that's okay.
So go on, how many was it? For
267 in total.
267, right, sorry. We'll get it right on the next show. But anyway, we've got loads to discuss, and not just Tony Cascarino's stats from his career. What a week. And as I say, we're only going to keep it to two games, and I bet we'll overrun even then. We're going to start in Copenhagen and that crazy match. And I think we have to start, before we get into the football, before we get into all the seven goals and the incidents and things, we have to start with Marcus Rashford's red card. Because I felt, I was editing last night on the Times Sports Desk, and I felt like the match all flowed from that moment, really. All the incidents kind of stemmed from there. United had been playing quite well until that point. So I'm going to start with the Rashford red card. Red card, and I'm going to start with the strikers' union, Tony Cascarino. Red card or not?
Well, if you want to freeze frame it, yeah. If you want to take it in normal time, no. Hated it as a decision. Got red carded nine times in my career, and I keep thinking, how many would I get today? Probably double. And Greg, as a centre half left back, I don't know how many times you got red carded, but
less than that, I
two.
Think.
Two. Well, okay. Well,
he was nicer than you, I think.
He was the Gary Lineker type of defender, wasn't he, Gregor? I can't get in my head how. You can quite clearly see, and I know it's been said already, that, you know, he's got his back to the play when he makes a challenge and he connects with the ankle and he could have caused serious damage. I just have a real issue around red cards. Basically, we've sanitised them. We've just made them that any referee, a little bit of a challenge that you feel, it is a little bit reckless, but is it to the point of, well, he's got to go? And I'm like, I just don't know where you go with this, because I keep thinking of 10 years down the line. Well, what's red cards going to be in 10 years' time if we're at that stage now that nearly every game is having a sending off? That's my big fear, is that it will get worse.
Case for the defence, Gregor Robertson?
No, I'm a Tony. I didn't like it. I think it just shows that however referees and officials want to officiate by the letter of the law, there has to still be some room for like what the player's intent was. I know that that's almost irrelevant now. It's like, it doesn't matter. But that was a kind of glaring example of it. It does matter. He wasn't looking in that direction. He was trying to shield the ball. There was no malice whatsoever. It wasn't even a tackle. It was like, as I say, it was the kind of action where you're shielding rather than actually trying to win the ball back. It's getting your body in between you know, between the ball and your opponent. So just, and again, as Tony said, the fact that no one saw it, it's just this whole idea that seems to be growing and growing recently about we're re-refereeing moments in games and that things can look very different on a TV screen when it's, particularly when the referee walks up to it and the first thing he sees is his stud planted on his ankle.
Martin?
Yeah, look, I think what will happen when we're talking about where will the game be in 10 years' time, it goes one of two ways, doesn't it? And one of the ways, I suppose it could go, is that there will be a generation of footballers that don't shield the ball like that anymore. Now, you can argue, we were talking earlier, Gregor and I, and Zinedine Zidane shielded the ball like that all the time, planted his foot on the other side and shaped his body, and it was one of his great one of his trademarks as a footballer. And it's in many ways it's like rugby. You know, we've just had a Rugby World Cup. People who've played rugby all their lives are looking at it saying the game's gone mad, you can't do this, you can't do that, it's obviously accidental, this wasn't meant, this wasn't meant. And then people who are in charge of the rules say, yes, but, you know, that doesn't count anymore, we're trying to make the game safer, we're trying to make the game this and that. And so it goes one of two ways. It goes this way where every game ends up 8-a-side by the end, or we produce a generation of footballers that change the way that they play, that change the way that, that football is played to avoid instances like that. I'm the same as the guys. I'm looking at that and thinking, well, 5 years ago, that is, it's not a red card offence. It's just a football incident. It's an accidental thing that happens. I'm not even sure it's a booking. It's just regarded as an accident and something that can happen in a contact sport. If you're trying to shield the ball, sometimes your foot gets put somewhere and someone else's foot turns out to be there first. It's one of those things. But the way the game is refereed now, I can see how it was given. You know, last night I was watching it on the box. There were three ex-professional footballers there, all from around the same generation. Two of them were absolutely outraged by it. Both ex-Manchester United players, to be fair, but they were both outraged by it. And the guy that was on the co-coms, Robbie Savage, wasn't, and said as soon as he saw the slow motion replay, he's in trouble. This could be a sending off. But interestingly, it was as soon as he saw the slow motion replay, because in real time, you're not going to pick that up. But what are we going to do? You know, are we going to uninvent the rewind and fast, you know, pause facility on your everyone's televisions? You know, are we going to ban action replays or whatever? Because, you know, you can't get around the fact that everything will be looked at, not in real time, to try to achieve this clarity. And then as soon as you look at it in slow motion, obviously things look worse. Mm. You know, every single rugby challenge looks far worse. Any head contact in rugby looks horrendous in slow motion. You know, it looks like everyone should end up in prison in slow motion, you know. But it's not. If you see it in real time, you think, well, of course, it's a contact sport, and that's the contact that is going
to
happen.
Yeah, I want to come back to that theme and the idea that the rule makers and things, because it was a subject in your column this week, Martin. But just want to pick up on one of the points you made, Gregor, about intent. So, you know, you and Tony both played the game. If you had been on the receiving end of that challenge, you wouldn't have been complaining?
No.
Even as someone who broke your leg during your career?
No.
Because it was, in that respect, in terms of the outcome for the player who Rashford tackled, it could have been bad. He could have turned his ankle, could have broke his ankle, could have, you know, snapped a leg.
Yeah, look, you wouldn't have been happy about it. The guy just stood on your ankle. And
no, of course,
but
what I mean is you wouldn't have stood up going, waving a card.
No, might have thought it should have been a foul, but if the referee didn't see it, because it looked like a kind of tangle, and as I say, he's manipulated his body to shield it, if the referee didn't see it, it's one of those things that you would feel a bit angry about it, and you think maybe it should have been a foul, but I don't think there's any world he would have thought that should have been a red card, even though that happened. But even if he'd broken his leg, he wouldn't have thought that. But this is the thing, we're also kind of retrospectively trying to making these decisions now, because sometimes it's on whether a player's been severely injured or not. Like, because, you know, what was the one that, was it Son on an Everton player when he pushed him? Who was it? Gomez? Is it Gomez, this midfielder?
I think it was, mate, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the really
bad injury.
It was a while
back, yeah. He broke his leg, but it was a nudge. And because he broke his leg, he had to go. It's like
the Eduardo tackle all those years ago, the Birmingham one. Is it Birmingham or is it Stoke?
Birmingham.
Birmingham against Eduardo. The referee's not going to send the guy off initially, and then he sees the state of Eduardo's leg, and then he sends the guy, and then he red cards the guy. But initially, in real time, he's not going to send him off because he just thought it was a normal foul.
Like for me, that's a dangerous path to go down. Like, I understand people might be outraged us even discussing that, because that, even particularly that that Eduardo one was pretty brutal. But it is part of the game. It's a risk when you step on the pitch. And I, as you say, I broke my leg, and I know that when the guy made the challenge, the ball was there to be won. And when Martin's talking about it, you know, perfectly validly, you know, we're looking at 10 years in the future, what's this going to do to the game? Players aren't going to be able to do that. I can't see a world when the ball is there to be won.
Yeah.
Like, it's like a high foot challenge. It's like sometimes when the ball's at a certain height and you're like, if I don't try and win this now with my foot, you take it away and he might
score. He'll nick it past you.
He might nick it and score. Yeah. So it's the only way, it's the only physical like mechanism you have to win the ball back.
Like a reflex is what you're saying. A reaction.
It's more than a reflex. Yeah. It's if you don't do it, the consequences might be that your team concede a goal. Like sometimes if that's happening like around the penalty box, you have to try and win the ball back, and it's what you've always done. So changing that like so much, so kind of profoundly,
I'm just thinking of say like the Rashford thing, where and we all see it. Players plant their ball, plant
Gazza
their foot
did it all the time.
All the time. I was going to say when we were talking about Zidane, Gazza was the one I was thinking of as well. That you plant your leg beyond the ball. Yeah. I'm just thinking, if there is a risk that if you touch your opponent whilst doing that, you could be, you're going to have, you're almost going to have a generation of players, a next generation of players that find another way of shielding the ball. And I'm not saying I know what that way is, and I'm not saying that it won't still happen. I'm just thinking that as the rugby players are being told, these are the rules, you have got to adapt. That is, in the end, what coaches will have to do with players and say, you know, you have got to adapt the way you play. I think it's very hard.
Or you might have to say, you just have to concede possession.
Yeah, maybe.
That's
crazy.
That's
a hard thing to say. It's crazy, Gregor. It's crazy, I know.
Conceding possession, isn't it? And also, look, intent is quite an easy one for me to define. I think you can just look back and, okay, may not be sent off at the time, but if you take Keane on Haaland, I mean, you don't have to, that's not rocket science, okay? Yeah. If you take Ben Thatcher on the challenge he made, where he clearly had intentions to hurt, just John Fashanu did it to Gary Mabbott with an elbow. Clear intent to go literally take this, you know, an elbow up in the air into his face to Gary Mabbott. So I think intent you can work on afterwards, even if you don't send them off at the time and you're undecided, but you can let them know that that challenge is unacceptable and you'll get a long ban for that. Now, I mean, how many times in a game, you know, whatever level of football you play, you've got a split second to make a decision on a tackle, or you're quite going to, you might not quite get there. The winger's quicker than you think. You know, how many times you see speedy wingers just get their toe and point, knock it past you? It's really hard to, if you're literally going to outlaw everything, then you'll be left with a game that Martin is talking about. Then you're, and Gregor's likewise, saying, well, you can't do this and you can't do that. So the game's going to change, in my opinion, for the worst.
Do you have to then, Tony, maybe tinker with the punishments?
Yeah.
So I think it was Mourinho used the orange card line first. I think it was Mourinho. He said it wasn't a yellow. It was an orange. So it's a bit more than a yellow, but not quite a red. Do you have to then maybe do, as rugby did, and I know it ends with everyone going nuts about the Rugby World Cup final, but they have this thing where you get a yellow card, so you go off the pitch for 10 minutes. Whilst you're off the pitch for 10 minutes, there's somebody looking at that, and that somebody then tells the referee this needs to be upgraded, or he comes back on after 10 minutes, and it's whether you upgrade the yellow to the red. If you did that with Marcus Rashford, say last night, if the punishment was right, you're off for 10, it's an orange card, you're off for 10 minutes. And then, if we trust people in front of a video screen to look at that tackle, to look at, you've got 10 minutes to look at it and look at it and look at it and go, this is an accident. There's no intention. It looks bad, yeah. but he doesn't intend to do it. He comes back on after 10 minutes. But if they look at it and think, no, he's trying to do him. Yeah. He's trying to do him. That's a bad tackle. Right. Then that is upgraded to a red and he doesn't come back on again.
Yeah, I think that's quite logical in many ways.
You know, that's how it was done in rugby at the World Cup. I'm not saying everyone was happy, but everyone's never happy. You're never going to make everybody happy.
No.
But that seems, if people are being punished more, surely what they have think that you can't have the old system of punishment but a new set of punishment rules.
Yeah.
You've got to update the system as well as the rules, and that seems logical to me.
Well, the rules is something that you talked about in your column on Tuesday, Martin. Don't blame VAR, take it out on the rule tinkerers.
Yes.
And I wonder whether that comes into slightly the discussion around handball as well. Manchester United getting a pretty dubious penalty, in my opinion. I know we were talking about this before we started recording, Tony. Surely you and Gregor must have slight views, both as a forward and a defender, both jumping in the air for the ball, using your arms. I mean, we're in a dangerous place on handball now in the box as well, aren't we?
Yeah, cool. If I couldn't use my arms, well, I don't think anybody could really, any defender, any striker. If you can't get leverage with, you know, lifting your arms up, and I don't know, I just don't know. Funny enough, right, and I'm going back in time, always like a blast from the past. Jack Charlton talked about international football in the late 80s and 90s.
Mm.
And he went, with me and Noel Quinn, he went, don't try and win the ball. I'm not thinking, really? What's he on about? He said, when you jump, just try and jump into a defender so that the ball will just drop. But don't try and win it. He said, because once you lift your arms up, the ref will, international football, because international football was worse than club football.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Yeah, absolutely spot on that. You would get penalised so often. So Jack was saying this years and years ago about, and when he was saying to me, it's so unnatural to say, I'm up against someone, I'm actually not going to try and win it. I'm just going to try and get the ball to drop. My challenge would be for the ball just to drop in an area of, if you spot a circle around where we were, that someone would come onto it. Because he didn't want you flicking it on, and he didn't want you to get your height that was required to win it. Because it was pointless. Once you did this, didn't even matter if you made contact. There was a decision last night, wasn't it, in the game?
Mm.
The ref blew his... and I think it's Harry Maguire. He's just lifted his arm. And the ball hasn't even gone near his arm. It's because he won the header, but lifts his arm.
Yeah.
You've got to stop heading then. If you can't let anybody win the ball, you know, fairly, stop heading in the game.
Gregor?
Yeah, the handball's law is in a ludicrous state because, you know, all the things that we're told about proximity, about...
Mm.
You know, that clearly came into play last night. I don't know how you move your arm quick enough. And when you're talking about, outside a silhouette or an unnatural, I don't even know what the term is now. Harry Maguire was feeling for the player. You could say if he'd let that go, you might have kind of, maybe trying to get a bit of a grab on him, but that's what you do in the box. That's part of defending. That's part of being a striker as well. You're holding someone off. So his arm was out to do that. It wasn't in any way to block the ball. So I'm not. There's no blame can be laid again at the referee, or even the VAR. The blame is laid at the rule makers because we were talking about, again, Martin and I were talking about this earlier, about the kind of unintended consequences of rules, and a lot of them are made to favour attackers, and it's the same as Martin wrote about in his column about the offside rule. It just almost all of these rules have had unintended consequences that people look at now and think, this just doesn't feel right. And I don't think, you know, there's a slight kind of acceptance, you know, we're getting used to this new handball, but it still doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel right. And both of them were ludicrous, I thought.
Just as a concluding point in section one of our discussion around VAR, because it'll definitely come up in the second section as well, talking about the other game of the week. Martin, do you think then that actually we have a little bit of sympathy for the on-field referees who are obviously taking a lot of attention, and this season the guys in the boxes as well in terms of the VAR getting a lot of attention, quite rightly a lot of the time, but do we have a little bit of sympathy for them then in terms of having to make these decisions with the rules as they are?
Without a doubt, I have sympathy for the referees. I think common sense is not being applied as often as it should be, I must admit, but... What I do not understand, I don't think either of those handball decisions are given in the Premier League. So what I can't understand is how you can have a set of rules and they're interpreted one way in UEFA competition and another way in our domestic competition. Because somebody is playing a version of the rules, because they can't both be right. And I find that very, very frustrating. And I'm not saying it's only just happened, because as Tony pointed out earlier, without a shadow of a doubt, jumping for the ball was refereed differently on the continent to how it was in England. Mark Hughes went to Barcelona, played his normal game at Manchester United, and that's one of the reasons why he didn't make it in Barcelona, was because he was having free kicks given against him all the time. And it wasn't like he suddenly went out into to Barcelona and played in a very, very physical way that he didn't play at Manchester United. He just played like Mark Hughes, and what a player. But in Spain, he got free kicks given against him all the time. In the end, Peter Crouch's career at international level, it wasn't what it might have been, because half the time he couldn't jump without someone giving the free kick against him. So it's always happened, but it does. Last night, you know, those two decisions don't get given in the Premier League.
But they would have when the rule first came in.
We've rolled back on it, totally.
Although it's even then, it's not consistent. You still see some handballs now, and you think, crikey, you know, a player who's sliding to make a block on the touchline and his trailing arm is there and it hits that and he. Handball, you're like, what? How can that possibly be a handball? But it has improved. You're right in saying that it has improved from when that handball rule was introduced. I think it was like maybe 3 years ago now.
It's really weird that, you know, Monday morning we'd all be having our ideas of what happened the weekend. Feels like every day's Monday now.
Yeah.
It does. Every day's Monday.
Yeah. Yeah,
where we're talking about what happened Thursday night, we're talking about what happened Monday night on Tuesday, and
yeah,
you know, and we're going to be talking about that Chelsea Tottenham game, and it's like, well, it's every day's a Monday now.
And also, Tony, you go to a competition, and you're suddenly all looking at each other, going, "Well, where's the VAR and that?" And they go, "Oh no, there's no VAR in this competition." You know, no one knew. When West Ham played Arsenal last week in the League Cup, and it looked like the goalkeeper got a little pull or before Ben White heads it into his own net, and I don't know whether the keeper gets there or not. He probably doesn't actually, but even so, you're sitting at home thinking, oh, VAR, this, and the next thing you know, they're kicking off. You think, well, what's happening to VAR? Oh, there's no VAR in this competition. And you think, why? It's West Ham versus Arsenal. We're not at some Parks pitch or whatever in the third preliminary round.
Easy on the Parks pitch. We've got some lower league football fans in attendance. Now, we're going to have to move on from VAR, because there was a little bit of football to talk about as well. Just 7 goals. And I want to start with a positive for Manchester United, because there is one. I thought they were very good for the first half an hour. Careful. And Sam, a Manchester United listener, had been in touch this week to say that, you know, he does acknowledge that the season has been going badly, but he feels we've been very critical. So that's fair. That's fine. Everyone's allowed their opinion, of course. And Sam, I do think that they were excellent for that first half an hour. I was discussing it with Paul Hurst, who was out there reporting on the game for us. And his view as the Manchester correspondent was that that was United's best performance of the season for half an hour. I'm not saying that's enough, and that's, I know games are 90 minutes. I can see you thinking, Martin.
I'm just thinking this column I wrote that said everything's random about Manchester United, and I wouldn't backtrack on that at all.
No, absolutely not. But I do think there were some positive signs there. 2 goals for Rasmus Højlund. Tony, do we think again that, you know, there's a striker in there, isn't there? There's a player in there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's eye catching his pace, and he can be quite direct. I think Man United as a team, maybe with the personnel that's been chosen as well, has let him down slightly, because he hasn't been given many chances. We're not talking about a striker in the Premier League that's had loads of chances game after game and he's missed them. He's not had chances in games. If you can feed him and find him. And I thought it looked way more natural. The Garnacho on the left, Rashford on the right, Fernandes just behind Højlund. And I thought that looked really good. And they expose that space. Wan-Bissaka, for one of the goals, gets in behind the back, and being adventurous as well and being brave to get beyond Rashford, that definitely worked. That's probably the best performance I've seen for United, even though I'm talking about the first period of attacking play.
Yeah.
They looked like it was with purpose, because before that, there was a real lack of purpose about their play. It was dwelling on the ball. It was quite slow, but that looked quite dynamic for half an hour plus.
Gregor?
Yeah, just that last bit is important. Like, this is what we've got to with Manchester United. We're praising half an hour.
No, but only because I think we should. Because, as I say, I was watching the match as an editor last night, thinking the story, as you're always thinking, the story is going to be, it's clicked. It's finally clicked.
Why did you think that?
Because they were 2-0 up and playing really well.
Yeah, but have you not watched Manchester United for the
because
last 2 years?
It's nice to dream sometimes, isn't it, Gregor? Come on. It's nice to think things can go
simply. No, I'm sorry.
Like,
even, I was watching, like, this is not rock and roll, but I was watching it with, like, my mum's visiting. It was 75, and it was 3-2, she was like, oh, this is going to be a big result for them. She's visiting, and I went, look, Mum, there's still 15 minutes left here. This is Manchester United.
Well, at least me and your mum are both dreamers. That's all we can agree on. But let's get to the point that I think you're going to want to talk about, which is the tactics after that red card. Because I do think that was interesting and slightly naive / chaotic and a bit bonkers, Gregor.
Yeah. Because
they kept going for them, even when they conceded 2-2.
Copenhagen ain't a good team.
Yeah.
I mean, look, you should go for Copenhagen. I'm sorry. I mean, I know they've won 4-3 and they missed a penalty in the last minute at Old Trafford, and that would have levelled the game. But Copenhagen aren't a good team. They'd be annihilated. If they were in Newcastle's group, they wouldn't have a point. I'm trying to think of Arsenal's group. I mean, there's not a group that they would not be bottom of. I find it very hard to think of a group that they would be bottom of, that they wouldn't be bottom of. Mm. And Manchester United have made them look like these sort of comeback kings. I mean, they spent the first, 15 minutes of the second half. They had a man advantage. They kept taking shots from 30 yards. The fullback who got booked must have had about 2 or 3 from 30 yards out. You're thinking, who is going to say to him, mate, if you could actually have a shot from 30 yards, you wouldn't be playing fullback, you know? It's just, they've made them look like world beaters.
You know, yeah, there were enough warning signs. Like, Amrabat gave the ball away, like, underhit pass to Dalot. Mm. Dalot think he kind of dived in. They went through, just blazed it over the bar. There were a few instances like that, and it looked like there was just far too much space opening up. But they were ultimately architects of their own downfall again.
Yeah,
I mean,
Dalot
defended well a lot, and it's hard for him playing on the left, but then he just switched off completely.
Yeah.
And
that's been a common theme this year for Dalot.
It's an equaliser.
He switched off.
And then again, they're playing the ball across the box, but Anders looked like he completely panicked and just punted it in the air.
Yeah.
And they've lost the game. They were architects of their own downfall.
So how do you do it then, Tone? You know, you lose a man, you're leading away from home in a big game. You know, what tactics have you been accustomed to in times when it's happened to you before? Sit deep? Or are you thinking like Martin?
Well, you could still got to have a tactic.
We've got one fewer player, but come on, lads. These are a lot of crap.
I'll ask you boys a question. Who was worse, Tottenham with 9 men or Man United with 10?
Yeah.
Right? I thought Tottenham were better with 9 than Man United were with 10.
Mm.
Okay,
I would agree.
Is that a fair point?
Yeah,
is that harsh? I don't know. I 9 men's a massive disadvantage.
Yeah.
Okay, which we'll go to later. But 10 men, you can still have a structure of a side that still enables you to cause teams problems. There's been many examples over the years of 10 men winning games. It's not that rare. It's
but that's
not
what
like
I mean.
It's
so what? So what should they?
Manchester United against Copenhagen.
Absolutely.
Manchester United with 10 men, Copenhagen with 11, shouldn't end up.
It feels like a leveller in some way.
Yeah.
So what is it then? Because, as I say, they went quite bold, even when they were conceding goals before half-time. And then afterwards, you thought Ten Hag had kind of said, right, let's settle it down. We can still win this game, perhaps, but let's settle it down. Which of those tactics should it be? Should it be a blend?
Well, what did they get wrong? Because that's a big point, right? Look at their games and results this year. Not one draw, right? They couldn't even get a draw out of a game that they ended up throwing away. Now, that draw could be vital to them having a chance of qualifying.
Mm.
And I didn't get that. There was a game years ago, Monaco played Arsenal in the Champions League. And I remember they were 2-0 down and they scored a goal. They were 2-0 down. They scored a goal really late. And the whole of the Arsenal team ran, sprinting into the penalty. They got to play the away game, by the way, because it was a two-legged. Sprinting back, they plonked it on the centre circle Arsenal. And I'm thinking, calm down. You can beat Monaco in Monaco. Don't go quick. They tried to get a 2-2 equaliser, conceded a 1-3-1. Arsenal won 2-0 in Monaco and went out.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, that's just being naive.
This is the kind of thing that, you know, ex-pros say in the studios talk about game management, and everybody kind of maybe rolls their eyes a bit. But there is an element of truth in that. And it's hard to talk about that when you're talking about Harry Maguire, who's, you know, vastly experienced. He's the captain of Manchester United. And Varane, who has won four Champions Leagues. You know, it sounds silly saying that to these guys. But and perhaps some of that needs to come, you know, I'm not being critical of Ten Hag much at all. But when they, you know, they continue to try and play it from the back, despite those warning signs. Like, even I was saying this to Martin earlier, even at the start, you know, they were praised about the opening goal. It was kind of, I think there were, you know, almost 30 passes. A lot, you know, they were knocking around at the back. And every time Johnny Evans got on the ball, he was like, he looked, you know, it was a little bit panicked. He was kind of trying to turn him back and trying to play. It didn't look comfortable. And then he gave it to Reguilon and he burst forward. They switched the ball. So, like, the opening 25 passes of that looked kind of, they were just knocking around at the back and it still didn't look comfortable. It wasn't like a beautifully constructed goal. I just don't think that, you know, we've spoken about this, about Ten Hag trying to play in a certain way, or, you know, but also having to tailor that to the players at his disposal. And I still don't think that a lot of the players he has in his defence are comfortable building play from the back.
Well, it's
interesting. That's ultimately what has lost them the game in this.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I just want to bring up Luke Shaw, because I was discussing with Paul Hurst his ideas for his piece today as a follow-up. And he's going to be writing about all sorts of themes, but one of them is the absence of Luke Shaw and the effect that has on Manchester United as a team, both in terms of defensively, some of the things you pointed out, Tony, in terms of his awareness in the box, something that Mourinho criticised him for and that he's improved greatly. I don't think that goal that Dalot concedes happens if Luke Shaw's playing at the back post, potentially. Mm-hmm. And also his ability to bring the ball out and break lines, and his ability, his relationship with Marcus Rashford. So that is a big mitigating factor.
Absolutely, yeah.
His absence from the team.
Yeah, I mean, also his versatility, because he was playing centre half sometimes and he can play a fullback, and that side of the pitch is sort of area that's been difficult for them to fill, basically. And Martinez, yeah, look, there are absolutely there's mitigation, but that's why we've seen them tailor the way that they play. And ultimately, I just think that too many of those players didn't look. Even Dalot, every time he got on the ball, he wanted to cut inside because he was right-footed and play, and it was like it became too predictable. Once he did it in the second half, and he lost it, and they were on. There were just warning signs in that second half that they were causing their own problems.
It was a back,
and that's when you say, that's when somebody needs to say, "Look, this is a bit hairy. They've got too much space. They've had a few shots. They've had a few sighters. Let's try and maybe not take off our centre forward and try and play in their half a little bit, just for a little while."
Why are you giving Ten Hag such a not a free pass, but
an easy ride? He's giving an easy ride.
Because he's responsible as the manager, the coach, to understand that players who are not capable to do some of the things he wants them to be able to do, like Wan-Bissaka done a back pass in the second half that was frighteningly, it was like, good luck, Anana, on that one, but he got away with it. But, you know, this has been a theme that they're giving goals away. Now, if you're the coach, you have to take quite a big responsibility upon yourself that doesn't happen.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree, and even more so in terms of when you saw that was the direction of travel in the second half.
Yeah.
That you saw that your team was suddenly getting on the back foot, and that they were presenting the other team with opportunities. That's when I think a message could have come from the side as well. But look, as I said, you've got some hugely experienced players there, who might have recognised that themselves.
No, but nothing is changing. That's the other thing that's happening with Manchester United. Odd individual, you know, every time they win a game, it gets, you know, people think, oh, it's a corner turn, this is when the season's done. There's only one guy in that team, Scott McTominay, perhaps, but that's also to do with his international performances, that looks to have turned a corner this season. Onana has been much better since he saved that penalty in the last minute against Copenhagen. He's performances in the two or three games since then have been excellent. So that result changed things for him. But I just think with the rest of them, there's too much wrong collectively for any sort of win at the moment to be a corner turned. I mean, you know, people were reading things into the Fulham game, but if you saw the Fulham game, you're looking at it and thinking, no, they didn't play well enough for this to got, you know, confidence from it. And in the end, they score because Fulham for some reason, can't clear a ball for five consecutive, you know, they had five chances to stop Manchester United scoring just by kicking it up the field and don't take any of them. And Manchester United have got Bruno Fernandes. And, you know, virtually no one they play has got a player as good as Bruno Fernandes. So it's just all too random. It's all too sort of, you know, toss it up in the air and see where it falls, basically.
Well,
you know?
We'll see.
I can't see where you're coming from, though. Like, we have to say the sending off, which was spoken about, they were very unfortunate with. The goal, you know, some of the goals they conceded were unfortunate as well. So they didn't get the rubber green in this. But they still, once those things happened, they found a way back into the game. They deserve some credit for that.
They're 2-0 or 3-2 up.
They should have been able to hold on, you know, see that out, I think.
Yeah, well, Manchester United fans, I know a lot of you have been in touch about our coverage of your team. So do get in touch again. I hope you enjoyed that debate. And also, listeners, if you've got any thoughts on, you know, enjoyed a considered debate, Martin. We gave them some praise, bit of credit here and there.
Oh, I just think you're inviting trouble.
Now, come on, I don't mind. I don't mind. Tom.clark at thetimes.co.uk. Get in touch, whether it's trouble or not, or if you've got some views on VAR.
Martin.samuel@thetelegraph.co.uk.
Or if you've got some views on VAR, you can get in touch. But stick with us. We are discussing the other game of the week next.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome back to the Game Football Podcast from The Times. I'm Tom Clark and I'm joined by Martin Samuel, Tony Cascarino and Gregor Robertson. And Tony, as you sang earlier in your best Morrissey impression with the slight remix, every day is like Monday. And we go back to Monday for that Chelsea-Tottenham thriller. Loads of goals, loads of incidents, red cards galore, VAR. Should we start with VAR again, as we did in the last game? Gregor, the Defenders Union, two red cards for two defenders. Any case for the defence for either of them?
Right, remain me then. This is my head absolutely spinning. Yeah.
So you've got Cristiano Romero in the 33rd minute.
I think, like, again, this is. I think that's one where Martin and I were speaking this earlier, where even a few years ago, people have been saying, a lot of former players would have been saying that he's won the ball. And there's still a part of me who wants to say that, but I think we have come to a point where we can accept and realise that he didn't have to win it with such force and go through the player, which was clearly intentional. So for me, that has crossed a line, which is a line that should be there now, I think, probably in the modern game. So
it's the intent point. Go back to your thing with Rashford, where you're saying his intent is to shield the ball, not to stand on his ankle. This, you're saying, he wanted to clatter him.
Yes. And, you know, as I said, there are other sort of instances in a game where you have to maybe slide. The ball's further away from you. You have to maybe slide to win the challenge, and you go through the ball, and it's unintentional. And now you get red cards for it. I'm not down for that.
That, like the Curtis Jones ones and things like
that. Yeah, well, that was slightly kind of unique as well, in that his foot rolled over the top of the ball. Like, there are times where you can win the ball totally cleanly, but if you're doing it at speed and with enough force, that you also go through the man, you'll be sent off for it now. And I'm not like, I'm not in favour of that whatsoever. This is different. The ball was close to him. He was almost able to delay his sort of stride to time it that he hit the ball and also clattered through the player as well. So that was intentional. I think anyone who knows football would say that was intentional. And I think nowadays that's going to be a red card.
So does a doggy get intent as well? Does that fall under his in category?
A doggy's falls under stupidity, I think, really. You're asking me if the first one should have been a straight red? But again, no. I mean, it was a risky challenge, but because nothing happened, I don't think you need to give it. It's not changed the outcome of the game. I don't think that's enough to be sent off immediately on the spot. I think what he did afterwards was absolutely ludicrous.
Tone, you're laughing.
I'm laughing because I was thinking about Romero's one where he's nailed his Argentinian teammate.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's the incredible thing. That's the guy that plays for Argentina.
Yeah, I was thinking, and he does have that look about, for our older viewers, or listeners, should I say, he does have this air of Stan Laurel where he looks totally confused, like as if he'd done anything wrong, Romero. And he does make me laugh because I'm thinking, and by the way, he has got a pretty long list on his CV of nailing people, you know, and these
it's
really
his fourth red cards
in 75 matches.
Yeah.
I mean, and you put in the ones that it's been fine lines with him. He's done it a few times.
We were praising him only a few weeks ago for like having.
Well, he is a hell of a player.
No, but for having cast aside this reckless side of his game. And then we're just seeing it again, and it's going to cost his team sorely.
He seems to have, again, a bit of Daniel Passarella in his game, but I think he was a bit more shrewder, Passarella, when he did it, the great Argentinian centre-half. It was a bonkers game. And just watching it as an incident, it was literally, Monday night was one of them games where I came away thinking, I've never seen a football match like that.
Yeah.
Until Wednesday.
Well, thank God we previewed it last Thursday. Eh? We did say it was going to be the game of the weekend.
Very
astute.
Absolutely.
Martin, does it sound like then that actually the officials deserve credit for this game? Because as much as the red cards dictated what game we saw and the bonkers nature of it, do they deserve some credit then for the way they officiated this, took their time over decisions and came to the right conclusions in the end?
Yeah, it's a difficult one in as much as after what happened at Tottenham a few weeks ago against Liverpool, I was like, oh, this is crackers, why don't they do this, why don't they do that? So, obviously, what then happens is every decision is taking longer as everyone checks and rechecks and double checks and cross checks. And now we're absolutely certain we've got this one right. Now we can go forward. And then Ange Postecoglou says, understandably, we spent all game staring up at a screen, you know, all standing still, watching a screen to see what would happen. And I think it's a 57-minute first half, and I think the ball's actually in play for 23 minutes of it. That's a long time with the ball out of play, or you standing around waiting for a television screen to tell you what's happened. Having said this, say the one we're talking about there, Romero, and the argument against the, oh, well, he got the ball and you've got to take that into account, you got the ball. If you shoot somebody through a window, you can't then say, oh, I was aiming at the glass, you know, and he just happened to be standing behind it, you know. So
that's a good analogy.
You know, so that is what has happened in football. You can't then, you cannot take the presence of the man behind the ball out of it when you're winning the ball. Vinnie Jones, as good as ended Gary Stevens' career by going, by going through the ball over by the touchline with such force, it absolutely took Gary Stevens out behind it. And he played very little football after that, and certainly very little football at the grade he was playing it at before. So, you know, so that's what it's there to stop, basically. So I can understand that. Even though he wins the ball, I can understand that. And it's interesting now that we spend a lot of time debating whether someone should be sent off after 10 minutes or whatever. When previously the argument has been, you know, how do we keep 11 against 11? Whereas now there is almost, not a sort of bloodlust about it, but we are so we're so used to these rules now that you're almost sitting there going, well, that's a red card offence straight away. And it's like 5 minutes into the game.
I would actually, I'm even going to contradict myself here.
I love it when you do that.
Because I was watching this game, and obviously Caicedo scored that goal that went through the through someone's legs.
Jackson,
wasn't it? Jackson's legs. And he was like fractionally offside. And then after, close after that, Romero made that challenge. And I was sitting there thinking, although both of them were technically right, in a world without VAR, would it be so bad if Caicedo's goal had stood and Romero had stayed on the pitch? I would far rather that was the case, because the goal was, again, like I say, it was marginal, and you see it happen. I don't think, you know, there are occasions where you think that that alters what the goalkeeper's going to do. I don't think this was really one of them. And Romero's could be, I'm fine with, I know I'm a, I was a former defender, but I'm fine with someone with saying he got away with one there. And the referee even having his card marked about that, and it maybe even like influence him as a human referee in the game.
Do you have that in games then? Would you have it where you'd have clattered someone and gone, oh crap,
I got away with one there, yeah.
And but would the ref then say to you, you've got away with one, that's it, your next one, or not?
I think maybe even if you saw the reaction of players around them and you know, the rest of the
and then the yellow
the
card comes out and you go, oh thank God for that.
So he could have got
sent off. But I don't think he would even stop the game. Obviously, he didn't stop. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be like...
Right.
No.
That was retrospective. So, as I say, to let the game flow and let kind of two things that have you know, changed the direction of the game fundamentally. Yeah. One of them was chopped off, and then another one, we're bringing play back. There were so many things that were going through. The VAR had to re-referee. For all of that just to be put consigned to the bin, for those two things to just have been allowed to happen. That would be fine for me.
Do you think it played a part that the when he lashed out? I don't. There's never a red card for me, but when he lashed out earlier in the game, when he stuck his foot out and the challenge on the halfway line, do you remember it? And I'm not sure it was, but he lashes his boot out, and some people said, I think in commentary they sort of said, "Oh, could be in trouble
could
here."
Yeah, it could have been. It could be sent off, and they decide it's. Oh, they gave it another. Yes. It was petulant. It wasn't.
Petulant more than. So he may have slightly got away with one there, but I didn't consider what Gregor said, you know, on the night about giving the goal and leaving him on.
No, it's never going to happen.
No.
You need a world without VAR for that to happen. Yeah. But I think everyone watching the game, to see an 11v11 on the pitch, to see a goal scored that was a good goal. And, like, as Martin and I were talking earlier about. What was offside brought in for? It wasn't for that.
We've got away.
So we're completely like altering the fabric of the game.
We've got completely away from the actual rules of the game. This is one of the things I've got to be... Because there was something happened, and this is what I did write a little bit about in the week. Something happened the other day, and no one has mentioned this. I'm the only person who's mentioned this, because we are so used to this now. And it happened in... I think it was 1994. I think, was it Bebeto or Romero scored like this for Brazil in the 1994 World Cup? But for one of Chelsea's goals, I can't remember which one it was, Nicholas Jackson is a yard, maybe 2 yards offside, but he's walking back. The ball is played through to Raheem Sterling. It's in the Tottenham half, so it's not a case of he's not offside because it's in his own half. Everyone's in Tottenham's half. Ball gets slipped through to Raheem Sterling, who is now sprinting. Nicholas Jackson, therefore, stops walking back. So he's 2 yards offside when the ball's played to Raheem. Stops walking back, turns and starts running. He's now a yard ahead of any Tottenham defender because he starts off behind them, basically. Yeah. By the time Raheem gets to the byline, he's cutting the ball back to Nicholas Jackson, so he's not offside, but he's still a yard in front of any other Tottenham defender because that's the yard start that he's got. Scores, and there's not a ripple of complaint about that because it absolutely fits perfectly with the rules. And my point is this, the rules are nonsense. He cannot not be active just because he's walking, you know, because he's turned and made himself active. You can't not be active.
Again.
Yeah. But you can't not be active. But I think that one dates back. I'm sure it's the 1994 World Cup is the first.
Well, I was there.
And I think it's Bebeto is the first one to score like that. He's walking back. It's either Bebeto or Romero. And then he suddenly turns and starts running. But he's in front of the defence. And you think, this doesn't... There's no logic to this. And this has always been my point with offside. And all the VAR offsides and the millimetre offsides and the toenail offsides and this, that wasn't what offside... You know, when the offside rules were written, nobody ever envisaged you would be able to identify via the use of technology whether somebody was a fingernail offside or not, or a toenail offside. It was written that offside could be seen with the naked eye. It was written for the linesman. Actually, first of all, it was written for the referee, and there actually had to be space between you and the other guy. But it was written for the, you know, eventually modified for the linesman, for something you could see with the naked eye. So when referees talk about, oh, it's black and white, no, no, it was never meant to be as defined as it is now.
But do you not think some of the problem with the technology is that people didn't accept that human judgment? We as fans and as the media and managers and things, we didn't accept, no, he's off, how's they not seen that, etc, etc. So the responsibility comes to all of us.
So now you've got it, football. Now you've got toenail offsides. But it wasn't meant to be like that, Tom. It really wasn't. Benefit of doubt. Well, I can remember Jose Mourinho going nuts about a linesman's decision. I think it was Chelsea versus Fulham, and everyone said, yeah, but it's right. And he said, yeah, but it's right for the wrong reason. He can't possibly, the minuscule amount that he's got it right by, he's meant to give the benefit of doubt to the attacking team. There is no way he judged it as sophisticatedly as that. And of course, that was Jose moaning, even when the linesman's got it right, Jose still thinks he's wrong. But his basic point was right. The guy gave the Chelsea player, I think it was, offside. And when you looked at it, he was offside by a fraction. Yeah. And Jose Mourinho's point is, he hasn't called that as, you know, because he's got it. Yeah. He's meant to give the benefit of doubt to the attacking team.
Can I, just one more word, Tom. Just show you where we are of doubt, is the point. On all of this. We've had a 5-goal thriller on a Monday night and a 7-goal thriller on Wednesday night. And we've talked very little football. Mm. So the consequences of VAR in our game is a knock-on effect of the bigger game in, for me, over the next 5-10 years, because things can't stay as they are today, that's for sure.
Well, it brings me to my concluding point, because as I say, I do want to get onto a bit of the football. And David Hall, who's a listener from New Jersey in America, emailed me with the subject, video arcade. Tom, I endured Tottenham v Chelsea. It was too much like watching the NFL. Surely this isn't what we want for football. And linking that to some of Ange Postecoglou's comments after the game, talking very eloquently and in a very measured way about not wanting it, given all that we've discussed, where do we go? Do we turn back and get rid? Or do we persist and change it like you talked about, Martin? Try and be pithy, because I want to get onto Postecoglou's tactics.
I'd love to turn back the clock, and I'd love for everyone who loves football to realise that all the rage that we invective we sent in the direction of referees and officials, it's not changed. In fact, it's worse, because all we've done is open up a new realm of, you know, subjectivity and possibilities to pick over things and the minutiae of things and you know, look at slow motion replays. I'd love to just be able to accept now that we've got, you might have a flawed human being in the middle and running the line, but they were doing a pretty good job. And actually, the spectacle as a whole was far better.
Great.
It was far more entertaining. Because Les, you're right that, you know, these were still thrillers, but they were diminished. They were diminished by the officiating and by the use of the technology, in my view.
Tony?
Well, I will get a little bit nostalgic, because I did think the game was played in a certain way, and we accepted to a degree, you know, not say the failings of officials, but they don't always get it right. And that's not a problem, you know, to me. Why was the game, and I know it's still as popular as ever, why was the game so popular in the past anyway? Because football's meant to be controversial. That's why it was the number one sport. Because always, in every angle, in every part of the world, it's made in a certain way. I've played with different players from different continents, and football is by far the number one game. And it's a lot of the base of it is of how it was played. I understand everything evolves and changes. But I think when you make a pie and you just keep changing and adding more ingredients all the time into it because you think you may make it better, and it ends up becoming worse. So I feel like we're at that stage with football. We just keep thinking, change, evolve it. We'll solve that problem. We've had the short sleeves and the, you know, that your sleeve was there, that was handball. And then, you know, just change one after the other. if you look at law changes in the game, there's been like from 2016, there's been well over 200 law changes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's in one sport. I didn't even know there were 200 laws. But you know what I mean? There's been that amount of changes over them years.
Yeah. Martin, concluding point on VAR, where we go, forward or back?
You can't uninvent it. It's like trying to uninvent the wheel. So we're not going to be able to uninvent it. I just think it's got to be applied with more common sense. The people drawing the rules up, there's got to be more common sense in the whole thing. Look, you know, they've turned football into, and I think this was Ange's point as well, that it's a very stop-start game now, and it never was a stop-start game. Rugby, I think it was Linda Smith described rugby union as a really boring fight that someone keeps trying to break up for no apparent reason. And that's what rugby was, and cricket stops after every ball, football didn't. Football carried on going, but now it stops and everyone hangs around and they all look at a screen and
having drinks now during games.
Absolutely, it's changed. It's freezing cold and everyone's still maybe they've got cocoa or something like that, you know. But it is changing the fabric of the game. A little bit more common sense is needed.
The one thing that VAR has made us truly realise is that there's not always a right and wrong.
Well, that was always going to be the problem, Gregor. That was always... Everyone had it down. Everyone thought what was going to happen with it was, it will always agree with me. I think everyone who was in favour of VAR just thought, what I think will be now backed up by...
By facts,
irrefutable evidence will now back up what I think. And it's turned out that what football is, 91% of the time, is a judgment call.
Exactly.
And a judgment call. Well, speaking of judgment calls, that leads me to the football. Ange Postecoglou's tactics in this game. Tom Allnutt wrote about them after the match. He said he thought the manager, Tottenham manager, was a bit stubborn. And that high line, Gregor, comical, bonkers. We've never seen anything like it, have we? It's given you sleepless nights ever since, I imagine.
It was thrilling. That's what it was. I mean,
easy to say now you're retired.
We can talk about how mad it was or, you know, whether there was any logic to it, but fundamentally, I was watching this thinking, fair play to you. Fair play to anyone who wants to stick to their guns and their beliefs with that much kind of devotion, despite going down to 9 men. And that one picture that kind of that encapsulated it all, when there was like 7 men plus Son on the halfway line and half the Chelsea team running the other direction. I was like, what the hell is this? But it made for some spectacle, and it almost worked.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. I mean, who had opportunities? Dyer scored the goal that was offside. They were all at 2-1. and obviously, the scoreline doesn't really still manage to reflect what the game was like. Like, it was incredible. Incredible spectacle. I still can't make my mind up on whether it was, like... logical or not, whether it was the best way to try and get a result, but it almost worked. But
they always say idiot and genius are closely related, don't they? And I was like Gregor watching it and thinking, I was laughing because the goalkeeper was literally on the.
He was a proper sweeper,
midfield, wasn't he?
He was a conventional member of the
sweeper,
defense.
Sweeper. And Chelsea kept playing it in his position. Mm. So I'm watching the game and I'm thinking, no, the space is out wide. Get the keeper and just break from out wide. Don't go central because the keeper's just waiting. He must have done it 5 times in about 10 minutes.
He was my man
of the
match there,
Vicario. And look, it was amazing. And there is a part of me, a bit like what Gregor said, you have a manager that's gone, do you know what? We're 2-1 down. I'm still going after him. We're still going to try and score. And I mean, Son's chance, you fancy him all day long in them sort of scenarios, don't you? When he's got the goal at his mercy. I've never seen the team attempt that. I've seen many sides with 11 men all get behind the ball, regular in the Premier League, who are probably fighting for relegation. But I've never seen a 9 take on, you know, a club with obviously the type of players that Chelsea have got, go, well, we're still going to try and have a go at you.
I'm with Dyer, and Emerson Royale at your centre halves, then Højbjerg. It was like none of them would fill you with great confidence as being either disciplined enough or having the pace.
They wouldn't fill you with confidence 13 against 11, let alone 9, you know.
Yeah, it was incredible.
But I do think there's something to be said. We talked about one of our colleagues, Glenn, as the Glenometer for the where Tottenham are in terms of the season. Well, I've spoken to another one of our colleagues, Anthony, on the design desk, who's a Tottenham season ticket holder. And he's normally, he can be a little bit down about Tottenham, particularly when they've lost to a London rival. So I said to him, you know, how did you feel after the game? And he said, it's the only time we've lost to a London rival, and in that manner, and I've been okay with it.
But because
of how we've played.
But as a nation of people, Tom, we love glorious failure. That is our absolute... If you think of how many great explorers this country has produced, how we have gone around the world, you know, discovering places, and who is our most famous explorer? Scott of the Antarctic. Not only did he get there second. Everyone got killed. Right, and he is our most famous explorer. Right, you go through English history. We love nothing more than a failure that is achieved in glory. Name one battle in the Second World War. Dunkirk. We get forced into the sea in France, basically, you know, and everyone has to sail over from Dover. You know, we actually won that war. We actually won that war, but that's our most famous battle, the one we get forced into the sea by the Germans. It's you know...
But do you not think there's something about what Anthony's saying in terms of what Postecoglou's done this season with Tottenham that, yes, I take your point about the glorious failure, and there is a lot that we Brits love about that. But in terms of what Tottenham have done for these moments, that because he was talking about in the stadium, all the fans were chanting and singing as Chelsea were scoring. And he said they scored the third and they kept singing and they went singing even more. No, but do you not think it's more than that?
Mate, no, of course
it is. It is more than that in terms of what he's done this season.
The man's got a philosophy. You know, they lost, but they lost playing the way that Tottenham have played this season. You know, they lost taking a risk, taking a chance. It was great. It could have been a really dull game. You get two men sent off, someone throws a blanket over the game, and then it just becomes like the Alamo, and it's, you know, just defence versus attack for the rest of the game. And Tottenham actually made it a game of football where you're thinking at some stage, they could win this, they might actually nick this, or, you know. So it was fantastic. It was fantastic, but we do love glorious failure. You know, there is that about it as well.
Who discovered Australia then?
Ange Postecoglou. No, I'm keeping us on.
Because it was an Australian man that made all these bumps.
It's not just that we love... It's even when we're a success, we try to think of a failure that we can... Have a look at what King Alfred... actually did. Have a look at the post office, the civil service, the Royal Navy. He invents the prototypes of all of those, and so what we do is remember that he burnt a load of cakes. So he's remembered as this terrible baker, basically.
I honestly didn't know where this podcast was going to end up. There was a worrying moment when you started talking about shooting people. But
do you know what?
Talk about shooting people.
Through the glass, that was the...
But that's true. That was a genuine analogy.
Thank God that was just an analogy. Anyway, back to the football. And I want to ask Tony... Did Tottenham lose this game or did Chelsea win it?
Well, obviously the sending off had a huge impact to the penalty.
Even so, you know, because they were 1-0 up. Do you think, as much as we are praising Postecoglou and it's great fun and glorious failure and things?
Well, the first 20 minutes, it was one-way traffic and, you know, it looked like it could go...
They were brilliant.
Yeah, they were superb. You know, we talked about two games here, Tom, and the outcome of a sending off has really changed both matches. That's the common denominator. The sending offs have changed games, which they did.
But one's more foolish than the other. I mean, you've got to say Romero has done his team over, really.
Yeah,
that first half, the kind of last 10 minutes of it, was just like calamitous when you saw Maddison hobble off and...
Van der Ven as well.
Van Ven pulling his hand, two men sent off halfway through the second half. They've got four guys that they started the game with. You know, I've never seen a football match like that. There's only four players on the pitch, outfield players, I think. Midway through the second half, that were in the starting 11. So I don't think you can read a thing into it from either team.
Well, it's
really,
Man City
it's
up
such
next,
a weird,
isn't it?
For Chelsea, for Chelsea.
For Chelsea,
yeah.
You know, we know what City can do. For Tottenham, it's a case for me is that if you look at the table and you think this is his first season in charge,
yeah,
and how they've played within that, and yes, things have slightly gone their way. If you take the Liverpool game in, that went their way on that particular day, and there are a number of other supporters who are making a point of, well, look at Tottenham's teams they've played. They've had you can never say an easy start. They've had a start that's fitted perfectly. I've really enjoyed watching Tottenham this year. I feel like they're a team that play with purpose, ambition, and nearly all of them. I said before, Tom, you bring in a new goalkeeper and you bring in a new back four.
Mm.
That's exactly where Newcastle started from. So I do think this team will still do really, really well over the course of a season, because my opinion of the game now is that unless you play adventurous football, you're very unlikely to win things, because the laws are so against you, you have to play a very brave style. And they are prepared to do that. So I would like to think that with even more improvement, that Tottenham are going to be around quite a long time with Ange Postecoglou.
Very quick, I'll come back to Tottenham, but I just want a quick word on Nicholas Jackson, Tony. Easiest hat trick anyone's ever going to get? You'd have taken one of those, wouldn't you?
To be fair, I would give him a big thumbs up. And the fact that, was it the first one, the side footer off of Sterling's pass, where he's come onto? Now, that's not, it's a great chance, but it's not as easy a finish as people think. It's coming across his body and he side foots it past the keeper, Vicario. And I thought, do you know what? That's a good finish for someone who's seemingly been out of sorts. Now, Didier Drogba had a really tricky first season at Chelsea.
He did.
And he was not as good as Nicholas Jackson, in my opinion. He was on the bench more often than not. And yeah, they had great squad play.
That's why they bought Shevchenko.
Yeah.
They bought Shevchenko because they didn't think Drogba was going to make it.
You know, and I was there going to games at that particular time. Week by week, I was at Chelsea. And I remember thinking, you know, that point of Drogba and will he be good enough? And of course, history was fantastic after that first season. But I do think there's still hope with Jackson, because he is a guy that looks like he's going to get chances. Why would he be a complete player? He's only in his early 20s. I thought he was bought to be the player that would play if others weren't. Like Nkunku getting injured was an issue. Mudrik, I'm sure they would have thought he'd play more games. So I felt he was going to be a player that was going to be sparingly used in his first season. And they've been forced to play him because of injury. Brojard's got injured. You know, he didn't start the season. So I'm hopeful it'll come right for him. But he's still very raw because he's a young man trying to develop. But, I mean, the hat-trick, it can't do you any harm, can it? You know, Chelsea fans have got to be lifted by a guy that, you know, has gone away to Spurs and got a hat-trick.
Absolutely. Greg, a final word from you on the match.
I think Spurs will take more from this game than Chelsea. I think, like,
as even with the injuries, they don't think that actually, once the dust has settled and the praise has stopped.
That's a different question. I mean, obviously, so you've got Romero out for, who have you got next? They've got Wolves, Villa and City. And so you miss those three games. Van de Ven, you would expect to be a while because it was a proper hamstring pop.
Yeah.
Madison, bit of a doubt over. Richarlison's gone under the knife now. We've said for a while when, you know, there's some if they lose a couple of players, then that's going to be the real test. But having said all that, Dyer came in, who's completely been out in the cold. Højbjerg's completely been out in the cold, and they looked like they were invested in it. They looked like, even though they were playing in this crazy system, that they were really, invested in what Postecoglou wanted them to do. So that's positive, even though it's only a small sample size. I still think Chelsea, like, when you're playing against nine men for that length of time, they looked like. There was no one that was like, let's put a foot in the ball here. And it took Raheem Sterling, actually, to take the initiative, to drop deep, say, play it to him. He literally pointed, I think it was to Palmer on the touchline. Mm. He said, play it to him, and I'll make the second man run run.
Yeah, yeah.
So it took someone with a bit of experience, a bit of nous, to say, this is how we're not going to get caught offside.
This is how you get through them. Yeah, absolutely.
Because they just kept punting balls long that Vicario was sweeping up. They kept, like, punting them out of play, even, or like just really
Pochettino,
reckless, not inexperienced
looking
play.
Pochettino was looking
more and more
increasingly tense because he could say, we're not going to win this. I'm not saying he thought they were going to get beat, but he's thinking, we might not win this. And you could tell it was
Martin
driving him in.
Imagine the scenario if Tottenham got 2-2 with nine men.
Oh, absolutely.
Poch would have been absolutely. absolutely got pelters from everywhere because they couldn't beat nine men. I think, like you said, he was anxious because that was a possibility, that scenario of going 2-2. And I think the outcome for that would have been disastrous for him. Not in losing his job, but just
But it shows what can be achieved. It shows, look, they get beat 4-1, so you can argue, well, it shows what can't be achieved. But it shows what can be achieved with a philosophy. Because what happened there with Tottenham was they had a plan, they had a way of playing, they had a strategy, and they stuck to it, and they get beat 4-1. But it looked like there was a plan. It looked like whatever you throw at Tottenham this season, they are going to respond to it in a certain way, and you're going to have your hands full. You're going to have your... And if you look at the other game, the Manchester United game, that is not as apparent with Manchester United at the moment. That you know, they respond to something with a clear philosophy. This is how we play. This is what we
which
do.
Which was their way over
which
the years.
Was their way. There was a way of Manchester United, a way of playing that, you know, 3-0 down at Tottenham, you know, famously 3-0 down at Tottenham. I was there that day. There was a Manchester United way of playing that they didn't alter from that. This is what we do, this is what we are, and this is how we go about it. And the best clubs have that.
Although we'll see how Spurs do with Emerson Royal, and they are trying to play out from the back or be 2v2 in the next game. We might be saying that's foolhardy.
Gregor, you're finding that with Newcastle, aren't you? After a little while, as far as injuries are concerned, you reach a critical mass as such, which it's not possible to function as you were previously functioning.
Well, we'll see if more glorious failure is to come for Tottenham and Ange Postecoglou. No, we don't. Save it for next week.
Are you sure?
Because
I'll tell you about
King Canute.
Glorious failure, right? So King Canute, who is remembered as Crackers, you know, commanding the sea to go back. He wasn't Crackers at all. He was a great, great king. And what he was doing, he was trying to explain to his court, far from thinking that he could command the sea to go back, what he was explaining was, I can't command the sea to go back. You think that the king is like a deity, but I'm not. I will sit here and command the sea to go back, and it won't work. It won't work because I am not a deity. He's a far more intelligent man than he is ever given credit for. Once again, another person we remember as a failure who wasn't at all, although his name is spelt K-N-U-T, so it could have been worse, is all I'm saying.
I know. I never liked history at school. I always used to say, because you never learn anything new.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot today.
Yeah, I mean, we've learned a lot about history. Whether the listeners have learned anything about football or not, they can decide for themselves. Get in touch with me, tom.clark@thetimes.co.uk, to tell me whether this show has been a huge success or maybe a glorious failure.
Or you'll never listen again.
Maybe glorious failure. Martin Samuel, Tony Cascarino and Gregor Robertson, thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Monday, maybe with some history, who knows, but hopefully a little
maybe
bit.
Maybe we won't, who knows.
Maybe a little bit of football too. See you then.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.